I had almost, let's see, there was a Sahava schedule for May, and that was canceled. So at the time that she told me that, there was no idea that there was going to be an East-West gathering in 1962. I would like to point out a little bit of my youthful naivete and my inability to see what a great gift had been given to me. In the year before going to India, I had an incredible amount of time with Mercer Deuce and her family. Literally afternoons and evenings. I couldn't begin to tell you how much time. And now, as many of you know, if you can get 10 or 15 minutes with her, you know, it's a blessing. I finally became employed at an export-import company in San Francisco, and I might mention something about that, because as the year rolled on, and then we knew that there was going to be the Sahavas here in Pune, it looked like I wasn't going to be able to go. I had no savings, and I was earning what little money I was earning was just enough to pay my rent and buy food and so forth. And I was in school at San Francisco State College. So I really had a little chance of going. And then about August, I was to drive her and Mr. Deuce down the peninsula one afternoon, and she came out of the apartment, and I'd gotten the car, and she just very matter-of-factly said, someone that you don't know from some other part of the country has sent you a check for $500 toward the trip. Well, all I could say was thank you. I really didn't know what to say. It was so unexpected. And I was able to borrow a little money from a bank. The first step into the American credit economy. Thank you. I've never gotten out of it since. of course, I had not only been working at this job since January, and this was August. Time was fast approaching that I would have to go. And I approached my employer, told him I needed to take a trip to India. He said, sure. He said, we'll give you 2 weeks vacation with pay, 2 weeks leave of absence, and to help you with the trip, we'll go ahead and give you your Christmas bonus, and you can pay it back when you return. And also, I'll advance you $150 toward the trip. That's on my notes. Exactly. No questions asked. Didn't ask why I was going to India, what the purpose of the trip was. Just the doors just magically opened. And don't ask me why. I don't understand. As I said in my prologue, I can tell you the words to describe the experience of the story, but I don't understand what's going on anymore. Even more today, I don't understand it. And I'm so tired of my head, and I'm tired of words, and I'm tired of thinking about it, all that, what I'd like to call garbage. Personally, I'm at a point where I would just like to let this open up, if it's possible. The flight to India was on a relatively uneventful, a lot of rubbing of egos, as is usually the case. One interesting thing happened, though, again to show you the perfect timing of Baba. On the Swiss Air flight from Hong Kong to Bombay, I was sitting on the aisle, and I just turned to my right, and I noticed this very handsome young Indian man who was sitting there quietly. And something in me said, talk to him. So I did. And I found out that he was working for some steamship company, but he had been reading a lot of Ramakrishna. And he knew that he had to return home, and he had to seek a true master. And this was the reason why he was returning to Bombay. So I course, immediately started telling him about Baba. And I later found out that he was able to get to the Sahavas, and he was the last person to see Baba at the end of 1962 East-West Gathering. Now, it's not me. It's not me that turned and talked to him. It was Baba turning me and, you know, doing it. So we finally got to India, and true to Murshida's prediction, I came into the presence of Mayor Baba in the afternoon of October 1962. I don't need to describe the political events going on at that time. The world was in a state of madness. I'm sure you've heard those in other stories. I did not have an overwhelming emotional experience, being a very cerebral person. And being as young as I was then, I really wasn't in touch with my feelings. But I did have an unexpected reaction to Bob. Completely unexpected. See, I had seen pictures, and I had seen films, and I always thought that Baba was very homely, which is a euphemism for ugly. I thought, I had a genuine aesthetic experience when I met Mayor Baba. He's the most beautiful human being I've ever seen in my entire life, I ever hope to see. The only comparison that I can make that comes to mind that makes sense is that he was like a perfect, a freshly picked perfect rose put into a steuben glass vase with maybe a little water on the rose petals to give it that dimension of freshness. It was aesthetic perfection. And of course, many conversations I've had with Margaret Krask, she's backed that up in talking about the physical structure of Baba's body. For those of you who are into dancing, appreciate this. He had a perfect spine, and his ability to move his arms and legs was just as perfect as Margaret had ever seen. And of course, Margaret is in the position to make that kind of judgment. The first afternoon, the women met with Bob in the morning, and the men in the afternoon. My first introduction to Bob is a very warm memory. The men would line up, and we would be introduced by Erish, and then Bob would motion for us to come up to where he was sitting, and he would reach up and embrace us. And I remember when he first embraced me, something told me to close my eyes. And I did, and I felt for a few seconds as if I was just lost in a cloud, that I was gone from this phenomenal world. It didn't last very long, but the impression was crystal clear. And too, I could feel this radiance and this glow coming off of Baba. Another very beautiful thing that I was very impressed by was the embrace was so personal, so intimate, and yet so impersonal. I mean, he pulled you down, embraced you, and let you go. And it was done so beautiful, so exquisite. And I watched Baba that afternoon and listened to Erish as he would interpret for Baba. Number of amusing things that happened to illustrate my impression of Baba at that time. I'm not speaking so much of how I think about Baba now, but how I was evaluating him or assessing him then. And over the period of 4 days, if there could possibly be a Christ walking on the face of the earth, it would have to be Mayor Baba. Because by every tool of evaluation that I had, he had achieved everything in his personality that any of us could aspire to. He was a master of any kind of detail. He had a consummate sense of humor. His facial expressions were mobile. It was always changing, never the same, later I realized through reading and talking to other people that he was here in the present, but at the same time he was everywhere working. And the mobility and changing of his expressions was a reflection of that. And of course there was his serenity, his compassion, and just the general aura around him. But a number of the things that I recall, the first afternoon, putting his hand up, doing like this, and saying, "You don't know how close it came. That close to full-scale nuclear war." And what he was saying is that it wasn't Kennedy that stopped the Russians. It was him. Then I remember would look out over the group of men and he'd point out to Fred Frey and he'd say, "Fred, don't worry. The prince is going to pay. The prince is going to pay his account. Don't worry." Later, he was paid. A year later, had a big dinner party in New York, and the Arabs didn't have checks. They carried money in these big belts, and one of the Arabs had gotten pushed into the swimming pool at the height of the party, and Fred was given $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in wet cash. And at 4 o'clock in the morning in New York, downtown New York, here he's out on the streets by himself with all his wet cash. So he got paid. Can you imagine how you'd feel with all that money in downtown New York? Or he would look to another couple. I'm not going to mention them by name, but he would look at them and he would say, let's just say that's Bill. "Bill, why didn't you declare the exact amount of your luggage weight in Honolulu? God does not tolerate any dishonesty whatsoever." And this person just having a very sheepish look on their face. A lot of my impressions of what happened during those 4 days in India are not clear, because Baba was working on me at that time, as I'm sure he was working on everybody. For me to say that he was working on me doesn't make me special. I have a characteristic that I think I'm beginning to work through, hopefully. But it was most pronounced during the 4 days that I was in India. I became very hypercritical. I thought, everybody here is nuts, except me. I was extremely critical. One of the things I was most critical about was all these people running around yelling Avatar, Mayor Baba, KJ. I thought, that's silly. And there was this sweetness and all this stuff, and I just couldn't take it. I just couldn't take it. You see, nothing in my heart had been opened up or developed. I was all head, "You know it all, boy. Look how he's been doing all this to me," and I still thought I knew it up here. Anyway, I became very hypercritical, which made me withdraw somewhat. And the only time I really felt happy while I was there is when I would, figuratively speaking, put blinders on and just look at Baba. Just look at him and focus on him. So a lot of things that occurred I don't think are clear to me, and I don't think they ever will be, because I was unclear inside. A lot of people that I met, I didn't even recall them until I met them years later. One thing that does stand out in my mind is a memory that I will always cherish. If I can describe this... I don't know how to put this in words. It just shows how Bob is just aware of everything. People sitting in front of him. I'll move out here. I was sitting here, but quite close to him, and he was looking off in this direction. And I was moving away. And all of a sudden, his hand shoots out like this, right into my hand, and squeezes it. Now, and it was just perfect. It couldn't have been more perfect. It was like an arrow hitting the middle of a bullseye. And he's looking here, but the hand went right in perfectly, and it's that squeeze. I don't know what it meant, but it has really stayed with me. What he was doing there, I don't know. One other thing that is a very strong memory is when I was going through my head trip and being very critical of the people there is one morning after we had been at Guru Prasad and Baba had done this, which meant everybody leave now, we're finished. I hung back. And I was the last one out of the hall, and I was at the other end of the hall, and Baba was seated on the couch. And I was feeling the sense of this is all crazy. And so I looked at Baba, and I went like this. And Baba went. He simply confirmed it. See, yes, it's crazy. The other time with Baba, of course, there were the afternoons. I have a feeling that many of you are acquainted with the details, but there were the long, hot afternoons where we would sit in front of Baba, and literally thousands of people would file by, and he would touch them, embrace them, garlands would be given, and so forth. It was very amusing the first afternoon. It was very clear, not a cloud in the sky. And he came out and he said something to the effect, unless you wish to get wet, you better leave now because it's going to rain. A chuckle rippled through the audience because obviously it's not going to rain. Half an hour later, we were drenched. We were drenched, and I think that the water was at least this high. The closest thing to a personal meeting I had with Baba was Mershita had three of her little boys that she was concerned about. One was Khalid Alfaki. And Jimmy Mel, his stage name is now Brenner Mel, and myself. And she made some arrangement where we could go in and ask Baba about our career, what we should do with our lives. And I'm sure many of you have read this, but Khalid was to become a doctor, and he since has become a doctor, and a good one. And he just works wonders on you. And Jimmy's a dancer. And then there's a little bit of misunderstanding mythology, I think, surrounding the account of what occurred between Baba and myself. And I insist that it's crystal clear in my mind. I was taking courses at San Francisco State College at that time in physical education. Baba did not tell me what to do. He merely asked, what are you interested in? First thing I thought was physical education. So I said, physical education. And he just went like this. And Ari says, Baba says, go back and finish your education. And until I go into my grave, I will believe that's what happened. It's been written up a little bit differently than that. And I did. I went back and I finished my education. I have a lot more to tell, but if there are any questions about those 4 days in India with Baba, I'd like to I'd like to take any of those questions now. Yes.
I wasn't sure if I understood you. Did you say that God said it's going to rain and give you the water?
That's what I heard. Yes.
And nobody left.
Nobody left. No. You know Peter Townsend's album, Quadrophenia? Love, Rain or Me. And the whole thing is suffused with rain. I think that was some way of Baba Sharon's loveliness. At least that's what I would feel there.
We can appreciate that.
Who's we?
The whole
day. Okay. Roger, maybe we should have a prayer for rain tonight before we finish. any other questions about those 4 days? Obviously, I at this point in my life, I'm as grateful is the wrong word for being allowed to be with Baba for 4 days. I have no idea why it happened. I don't know what the reasons were. I'm not interested in knowing them. And I assure you that it doesn't make me feel any special. It just happened. Whether I deserved it or not, I don't know. It just happened. I will say that after I left India, I noticed a subtle change in myself. Not that being an astrologer now, I know that a person's basic character and personality is not going to alter that much. Nevertheless, since I left India in 62, I've noticed that there's an inner core of knowingness and strength that has never left. Whereas before there was a vacuum and sense of emptiness, despite some of the crummy moods I can get in or go through, I can bounce back real quick. There's a sort of a built-in resiliency. And I mention that because I wouldn't say that I'm a particularly happy person. And I'm not going to pretend that I am. I know that Baba wants us to try to be cheerful and accept each situation for what it is. It's rather difficult for me sometimes. And I like to think it's just because I'm tired. And if I could leave here tonight, I'd just like to go home to him and be done with all this. Yes, sir. Sweater? It's Baba. And he's winking at you. It's a John Newcomb tennis sweater. And I bought it. I bought it because it reminded me of Baba. And I bought a blue one and a white one. And it's all I wear. And it's comfortable. But it kind of makes me think of him a lot more. Sir?
Did you ever find out who gave me the $500?
Yes, I do. I didn't hear your question. I'll answer any question you ask.
I didn't ask that question.
What question? Okay. I didn't say how I'd answer. Yes.
Do you suppose that when Baba was nodding his head about, was that you should be a teacher?
I have no idea, Roger. I don't know. All I know is when I said physical education, he nodded his head. And then I heard Ari say, Baba says go back and finish your education.
You do teach tennis?
Yeah, I do teach tennis. When I can find a court. Mm-hmm. I heard only the first part of the question. Mm-hmm. With her? No, I was not a Sufi at that time. No, I went to, prior to going to India, I went to some Sufi meetings. The Sufi order was very small at that time, as you know. I would say maybe 25, 30 people at the most. Occasionally she would ask me why I wasn't at the meetings. And I said, well, it was a nice day. I went out and played tennis. And she looked at me and said, Gary, you should come to the meetings. I was a very resistant child. And I was, frankly, I was blind. Blind and stupid. I admit it. I had so many opportunities back in the early 60s, and they just all went by me. And I was too young and too dumb. And as I say in astrology, those characteristics don't really change that much. The remainder returned to San Francisco, and I remained there with Murshida until May of 1963, and at that time I returned to Atlanta, went back to Oglethorpe, finished school, and then went into teaching school. I'd like to tell a few anecdotes to illustrate the idea or the concept that Baba is always with us, every moment. I'll probably tell these just at random. And if you get tired of me talking, please tell me to stop. Roger said the talking went from 30 minutes to an hour and a half. But I can stop any time. One anecdote is I remember being in Laura Delevingne's house years ago, and she had spent the afternoon showing me pictures of Anayat Khan. And I kept smelling this odor. And I asked her if she had any incense in the house, no. Were there any fresh flowers, no. And I just kept smelling this odor. And then about 3 months later, I was leaving a play that some high school students had put on, and I was with one student that I was very close to at the time. And it was in the early evening, and I looked up into the heavens, and I saw a crescent moon and a star almost right together. And I remember quoting something by Anayat Khan. What he said to his wife just before they married. I'm a dervish. Today I eat dry bread. Tomorrow perhaps none. And just as I said that, the same odor passed. And finally it dawned on me that the only place I had smelled that fragrance before was when I was with Murshida Deuce in her apartment. She commented on that one time, and she said that that was the fragrance and was merely the presence of the master. Excuse me? I don't know if that's the word she used. Another example of Baba's presence would be in the spring of 1969, when almost everyone was in India. A student of mine in Whiteville, North Carolina, and I were together with her mother. She's now a member of the Sufi order. Some of you might know her, Heather Hoos. And we were alone on the Mayor Center, Myrtle Beach, and we had been in the lagoon cabin. This was the first time that Heather had ever had any contact with Baba. And we walked and we looked at some pictures, and we walked out, and all of a sudden something just hit me and overwhelmed me. The tears began to flow, and I just turned to Heather and I said, I miss him so much. He was such a good friend. And at the second I said that, I looked down, and I saw this little gold locket in the shape of a heart. I reached down and picked it up and opened it up, and this picture of Baba smiling. It's perfect timing. Or other examples would be going to a hockey game with Ned Foote and his wife, and, down here at the Oakland Coliseum. And just going to an ordinary hockey game. And you walk in, and the person playing the organ, just as soon as Ned walks in, starts pounding out begin the beginning. Or last summer, for instance, I finally took a class of students to the Marist Center. I taught in Myrtle Beach for 4.5 years, and I never entertained the thought of doing that because of the possible political repercussions, parents up in arms, because it's really a very conservative community. But in the course of teaching a class, in the planning session, some students mentioned they wanted to take some field trips, and one of them said, "How about that place out in Windy Hill?" I said, "What place?" And they said, "You know that place? It's a nudist colony." And when I heard that, I thought to myself, "Well, it's about time. I'm going to take him out." So I took a group of 27 students out, and again, there's a multi-dimensional thing happening here to show you how a Baba can really set you up. It had been my experience up until that time that any time a group of people came together in a real intense situation involving Baba and his work or doing something, there was always chaos and confusion and madness. So just before we were to get on the bus, there's 28 high school students. I said, "Now look." And I was anticipating this because there was very complicated transportation arrangements. We had to take a bus into Elizabeth's and then get out, spend some time there, and go back into the gate, into the center, get out, transfer into cars, sign in. You know, and I thought, you know, that's going to get kind of crazy. I said, "If there's any problem, it's par for the course. Don't worry about it." And I am not exaggerating. From the time we left until the time we returned, I've never seen anything go so smoothly. It was perfect. Absolutely perfect. And I had to sit back and I had to look at myself and think, what assumptions do I have? Throw your assumptions out the window. At the same time, at one point in the morning, late morning, I got separated from the group and I was by myself and I had not been down to the lagoon cabin for some time. So I thought I'd go down and sit in there for a few minutes. And so I walked down. And walked in and sat down and was silent for just a few minutes and looked up, and next to Baba's chair was this beautiful vase with a single freshly picked rose. I think it was some sort of confirmation that he was pleased that the children were on his center. Later in the afternoon, I called Elizabeth to thank her. I couldn't talk with her, but I talked to Jane. And Jane said, "Well, if it'll add anything to it, we never put freshly picked flowers in the lagoon cabin. And just before your group arrived, I told Malcolm for the second time, whatever you do, don't forget to put that rose in the lagoon cabin." I'm kind of skipping around, but another example of his omnipresence would be coming back this last time and being on the road all day long and have a good evening, Roger. Being on the road all day long with a lot of head stuff coming up, you know, being very worried and really tense and tired driving 800 to 900 miles and finally saying out loud, "Baba, you've got to show me that what I'm doing is the right thing," because I came back out very suddenly again. So there was one motel room left in the Holiday Inn. They gave me the key. Room number 7. Okay, that's enough. That's enough. I'm not quite sure where I should wrap this up. Maybe one more story? Well, I tell you one crazy one. And I'll try to. It's a rather lengthy story, but I'll try to shorten it somewhat. My first year in Myrtle Beach teaching, I was scheduled to take myself and two other teachers to take 52 students to the Bahamas on a senior trip. Great fun, chaperone.
How old were they?
Seniors? 17, 18. Yeah, great fun. You know what kinds of things that they would probably be doing?
I know, yeah.
Exporting and importing. In any event, I found out on the Sunday before we'd leave that that very famous Scorpio, Alan Cohen, was coming to town. And he had not told me he was coming to town. And I really wanted to talk to him. I hadn't seen him in over a year. So I got on the horn Monday evening to try to get out of going on the trip. And I was on the phone for 4 hours and absolutely couldn't find a way out. Which I couldn't believe that I could not find somebody to take my place. All expenses paid to the Bahamas. That didn't cost me a cent. Tuesday evening I was with Alan and we were talking about this and that. And I told him about how I had tried to get out of going, and he just said, "Bob, I want you in the Bahamas." And I thought to myself, "Why do you know Alan?" One good friend of mine lived down in that area by the name of Ada Schifrin. I'm very fond of her, and I thought, "Well, if I'm going to go down to Florida, I'd like to touch bases with her." She's been a Bob lover for years. She lives in Coconut Grove. So I didn't know where Coconut Grove was. Got out the maps. Couldn't find Coconut Grove on the maps. So we're off on the trip on Thursday afternoon. And we get into Miami about 10 o'clock. I had 45 minutes of sleep that